Syracuse Opera opens its season tonight with Puccini's passionate and politically charged Tosca. WRVO arts reporter David Lowenstein sat down with musical director Douglas Kinney Frost at the Civic Center. Frost discussed how he gained a deeper understanding of this great work.
Can you just begin by giving us a brief plot summary of Tosca?
Sure. Actually, the plot's fairly simple. It's sort of a classic love triangle. And there are a pair of lovers. One is a painter. His name is Cavaradossi, and he is in love with Tosca, who happens to be a famous opera singer in Rome. And she is so alluring that she has captured the heart of the police chief in town named Scarpia, who is truly one of the great villains of opera, and he obsesses with her. It's a very unhealthy relationship and does everything possible to break them up.
Great. Now talk about the setting, the actual locations of the three acts.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to be in Rome this year doing another piece, actually at the theater where this premiered, which was awfully exciting. But that enabled me to go to all three of the settings. There are three acts in the piece, and each act is in a very specific, very historic building or landmark even in Rome. The first one is a church, San Andrea della Valle. Incredibly beautiful church, beautiful cream marble. The ceiling is completely blue and pink. The entire church glows. It was so different than the other churches in Rome. Act two takes place at a very famous building called Palazzo Farnese from the Farnese family. And right now, it's the French embassy, and an incredibly beautiful insides, but rather austere and square outside. It's an unnerving building to be in.
And this is where the second act takes place and where Scarpia's office is. And then we get to act three. Where does that take place?
Yeah, Act 3 is an incredible building. It's the only truly round building. Every part of it is round. It's separated from a huge moat. It's called the Castel San Angelo. If you could imagine the staircases being as circular as the building, they go up and down and hither and yon, archways. It's 2,000 years old, so it has been reconstructed hundreds of times, literally, and it seems like that. You don't really know where you are at any given time.
Now, without giving away too much of the surprise ending, if you will, were you standing at the top of the fortress? Were you standing by the parapet?
Indeed. And what's amazing about this is you really get practically a 360-degree view of Rome.
So you're there this summer, and you take the tour of the actual places that are in the three acts. Mm-hmm. How does that translate into how your baton works in front of the orchestra?
So, in fact, I'm talking to you now just having stepped out of rehearsing Act 3 with the orchestra. And I can tell you, the minute that those chimes start, I'm taken immediately back to Rome. There's something magical about a Sunday morning in Rome, and it happens in a lot of Italian cities, but just because there are so many churches in Rome, you just have this cacophony of bells at different pitches, and there's three or four times on Sunday mornings when they all ring, and it's incredible.
I read that Puccini actually went to the fortress in the morning to hear the bells, and in the original production had four different foundries cast bells to recreate that specific sound.
Yeah, he absolutely made sure that the very specific pitches from the bells were translated into the orchestra. And there are some choices that he made to create the rest of the orchestration, all of the music, around those bells. It was a lot of drama for the first production, and it retained some drama because in one of the bells is no longer created. We play them on chimes now, and those chimes are no longer being manufactured. Now, it happens to be that Michael Bull, our fantastic percussionist here, has a set of chimes that includes the lowest note. So it will be all live for us, all acoustic instruments.
I'm sure Puccini would be smiling.
Well, I know I am. I hope he would be too.